Well, what a story. The Mexican Air Force has released footage of what a UFO expert says were 11 invisible, unidentified flying objects picked up by an infrared camera as they whizzed around a surveillance plane. A longtime believer in flying saucers, journalist Jamie Mousen has told a news conference the objects were real and seemed intelligent after they at one point changed direction and surrounded the plane chasing them. They were invisible to the eye, but there's no doubt about it. They had mass, they had energy, and they were moving. They showed a 15-minute video. Part of that video is on the coasttocoastam.com website because of tonight's guest, David Cereda. His first inspiration in life was to become an astronaut. In 1968, David and a friend witnessed a UFO along with hundreds of other witnesses. After this experience, David grew up as a UFO enthusiast, never living in doubt of the phenomena that has swept the world since the Roswell incident in 1947. His interest in space, religion, philosophy, astronomy, and science led him on to his career in related fields. He has worked deeply in high technology and environmental and humanitarian issues, and as a professional photographer for more than 20 years. He has studied world religion, science, physics, and paranormal psychology for more than 25 years. He's the author of the book, Evidence, The Case for NASA UFOs. His website, UFONASA.com, which is linked up right under his name now on coasttocoastam.com. We're going to talk this hour about this incredible find there in Mexico. David, welcome to Coast to Coast. How are you?
George, nice to meet you on the air here. Very good, thank you.
My pleasure indeed. What a story. Now, normally, if just a few pilots had reported this, a lot of people would listen, but they might not wake up as much as they are around the country right now in the world. Something's going on here. We'll talk a little bit with you, David, about the sightings in Iran as well. But with this, a Mexican Air Force team videotaping something that they could not apparently see with the naked eye. Can you explain a little bit of what may have happened up there?
Well, very deeply, yes, George. I mean, first of all, I mean, I can point out that when I was on Art Bell with James Olbrich at NASA on March 12, 2001, the very famous night that I was cut off the air and the show was, you know, we lost the satellite and the internet, at that precise moment that I was arguing with Mr. Olbrich about the space shuttle's black and white video cameras that look in the invisible infrared, the near ultraviolet, and he was saying, no, they don't. But I had actually confirmed with the head of astrochemistry at NASA and actually had confirmed also on their website that, yes, their cameras are special CCD-enhanced cameras that look in the infrared and the near ultraviolet. And it was at that moment that we were cut off the air. Now, the reason I feel this story is so powerful right now is because, I mean, It would be very easy to fake a visual sighting. You know, you could, you know, put obscure objects in the sky or in front of a camera. But this is confirmed from the Secretary of Defense in Mexico, General Clement Vega Garcia, to Jaime Musan. They had the big press conference today. The event was on March 5th, 2004, and their military drug enforcement agency is, you know, just perusing the skies at about 10,500 feet. Very cold up there, which is a very important point for infrared photography, because at 10,500 feet, with temperatures like minus 26 centigrade, any heat source is going to be like an infrared beacon against the background of that very cold atmosphere.
Okay.
And in the case of the NASA UFOs, we saw evidence of very large UFOs that were visible on the invisible cameras, but not to the naked eyes of the astronauts. And in this case, we have the same thing. We have all these pilots that are absolutely confused and baffled why they're seeing very clear images on what are now very extremely advanced infrared cameras. These are forward-looking infrared cameras that are the resolution on this type of infrared is far beyond anything we've seen in the past. In fact, when I researched on DOD through Department of Defense today, where I used to work, that most of the data on these cameras is actually classified. But the point is, in theory, if a UFO were to convert its mass into light, essentially what it's doing is reducing its mass or weight charge down to zero. And once it becomes light, it can either appear in the visible light spectrum as a light source, or it can disappear down in infrared, down in microwave, or it can disappear also in the ultraviolet. It is possible in this case that our actual UFO is vibrating at a much higher energy than infrared, but even if it's up in the ultraviolet spectrum or higher, that light is so hot that it leaves a temperature signature on the atmosphere, which in this case is quite humid. You have a humidity of 75% in the report.
Mm-hmm.
And that temperature signature shows up like a beacon on these very advanced infrared cameras. So the pilots are confused. They're seeing something that's there. They're also getting a signal on radar. And radar, of course, is microwave radiation, which is another way that we detect invisibility. So, I mean, the case proves itself to be, I mean, really, really, not only the fact that we're seeing UFOs, but we're seeing the evidence of the physics of how they actually work. I mean, these are craft of light.
I was looking at the video today, David, and I kept trying to rule out meteors, and I did, balloons, and I did. Then I thought about the possibility of some kind of chase planes or military planes. These pilots would have clearly have seen that with their eyes, and they did not. Why is it, in terms of technically now, were these objects cloaking themselves, or do you believe that they are just in that kind of light source on a normal basis?
Well, to explain it properly, I mean, first thing, I'll give you a case. One of my partner researchers is Trevor James Constable, who was a famous aviation author and British aviation officer in World War II. He noted a case called the case of Nansei Shoto off the coast of Okinawa during World War II. We saw from our aircraft carriers 300 enemy aircraft. Either it was 300 enemy aircraft or one giant aircraft. A huge whopping signal on radar. We launched our fighters up to go meet them. And these objects were doing 700 miles an hour in World War II, and back then we could not even do the speed of sound, which is, you know, getting close to 700 miles an hour. So we thought maybe the Russians or the Germans were far ahead of us. And I imagine in the case of Mexico here, they may even suspect the same, that it's some foreign intelligence or foreign government that has a very advanced cloaking device on their aircraft. But the point is, we launched our fighters up, and we got up there on a clear sky, and there was nothing there, absolutely nothing. And it was the signal was very clear on radar, just as in the case we're seeing today. So what Constable started to do, and Constable was introduced to me through a friend of mine named Lou Gatto, and I sent Constable a copy of my film, Evidence, the Case for NASA UFOs, and we both got very excited because we had double confirmation. Constable started using a 35-millimeter camera with high-speed infrared film without red filter. The film plane is very sensitive to infrared, but also near ultraviolet light, which are both invisible. And he got on film the exact same UFOs that showed up on the NASA video cameras, the giant, you know, 3-mile-wide translucent
disks
of light with the black holes in the center. But his discs were oriented at steep angles of 45 to 90 degrees away from the camera, making it impossible for them to be out of focus, what are known as airy discs, which cannot appear on those steep angles. So Constable was the pioneer of invisible photography in UFOs, and I firmly believe to this day, since I have studied his photographs and met him and interviewed him for my next film, Evidence 2, that NASA was actually just copying his technique, because all throughout space shuttle missions and studying the advancements of their cameras, I'm seeing clearly where they're looking. They are looking in the invisible. So what's so exciting about this case is that thanks to the Mexican military and government, they actually shared this footage, this invisible footage.
Did they do that, David? Why did they, you know, so many governments suppress this information. This government in Mexico just decided, they got excited about going public with it. How come?
Well, I think I think, you know, with all of the sightings in Mexico, I think they got, you know, they got very excited about what they saw. But further, I think that they're much more open than we are. I don't think they have the secrecy that we have down there. But they're probably also, you know, they brought it to Jaime's attention because they want to know what this is. I mean, is this a spy plane? Is this, you know, is this a UFO from another planet? But when we can, when you ask the question, are they cloaking? We have to go back to first. You mentioned briefly my 1967-68 sighting when I was a little kid walking home from Berkeley. We watched this UFO with over 50 people in that local neighborhood alone on the street. And after 20 minutes, we see this metallic UFO disappear in a blink of an eye right in front of us. In fact, miraculously, I was on my way back from Denver a couple weeks ago. I'm working out in Taos, New Mexico right now. And on the way home from Denver, where I gave a lecture on the NASA UFOs and did a PBS show, et cetera, and the local Fox news station did a big piece on it. On the way home, looking up, I saw a giant disk of light, intensely bright with a tinge of orange and white and mostly white light with a oval-shaped bite out of the side of it. Must have been miles across because it was way up there, and it appeared in our dimension and instantly blinked out and went into another dimension. And if you look through the MUFON files, you know, at MUFON, which are like, they have drawers and drawers of X-files, even in multiple cases there, you will hear stories of UFOs just disappearing in a blink of an eye. The question is, where are they going? And that's what, again, is so exciting about this case, is because we're looking at very advanced cameras. I don't even think Jaime has actually stated in here what FLIR infrared really is. I mean, this is really high-tech infrared. It's very classified.
Maybe they're not going anywhere, David. Maybe they're still there. We just, you know, we just don't know where they are. We can't see
them. They are there, and that's the whole point that I made all along. In fact, when I had my conversations with Edgar Mitchell, the astronaut Edgar Mitchell, about the NASA UFOs, he said, well, if nothing shows up, you know, in the visible cameras, there's nothing there. And when you consider, let's start with the whole concept of the impossibility of mass spacecraft actually even attaining the speed of light, because back in 1989, when I was having I had a long conversation with NASA's then head of propulsion, power, and energy, a brilliant physicist and rocket scientist named Dr. Earl Van Landingham. We were talking about a nuclear fusion project I worked for 10 years that NASA was really interested in. And I confronted him. I just popped, you know, NASA's head with the big question, has NASA ever made contact with an extraterrestrial civilization or UFO? And he said, no. When you consider the amount of energy in the form of propulsion that it would take to get a spacecraft to be doing 99% the speed of light, the energy signal radiating from that craft would be so massive that every amateur radio astronomer in the world would be able to see the signal well in advance of the arrival of the spacecraft. And he said, we have never seen anything like that yet. So, In current propulsion philosophy, we apply greater and greater energy charges in the form of rocket propulsion or what are now known as ion propulsion systems to get a rocket or spaceship or aircraft to go faster. And in Einstein's law, the faster you go, we'll start with a boat moving through the water. As a boat propels itself through a water with an engine, the boat encounters resistance in the form of water, and the water impedes or pushes on the boat, pushing it back, increasing its weight charge or mass charge. And as it gets heavier in relationship to that resistance, it takes more and more energy to go faster. When an airplane goes through air mass, it encounters resistance again, and that is why it takes these enormous amounts of energy to get a rocket to go faster and faster and faster. Right now, out in space, when the space shuttle is perusing around the Earth, it is orbiting the Earth at about 18,000 miles per hour, whereas the speed of light is 670 million miles per hour. What prevents a spacecraft from going faster is the faster it goes, even the apparent void of space actually pushes on it, impedes on it, and as it goes faster, it gets heavier and heavier and heavier, so therefore it takes more and more energy to go with the speed of light. Well, how much energy is Earl Van Lanningham talking about, an energy signal that we should see proportional to a craft coming to Earth from another star system? In particle accelerators, such as at Fermilab in Chicago, we can get particles like protons, which is most of the atom, or even muons, to do 99.99% the speed of light, but it takes 1 trillion electron volts of energy to do it.
And can we control it?
We cannot even produce 1 trillion electron volts for a full second yet.
No.
When we detonated the bombs in New Mexico and also Nevada, nuclear bombs, those bombs released 200 million electron volts of energy. So 1 trillion is 5,000 times more energy than the bomb.
Well, I tell you, though, David, these Mexican Air Force pilots were pretty excited. And, you know, they ran into something up there. And, again, I keep harping back to the government, the Mexican government through its defense ministry, to give permission to publicize this is uncanny.
It's absolutely awesome. I think this is a historic moment. Because what I'm going to tell you next is when we look at the impossibility of mass going light speed, and we don't see these energy signals tagged on these UFOs, the reverse hypothesis, I believe, that I have set forth in my work is that these UFOs are using wave generators that convert their heavy mass into light. And once their craft are made of light, they weigh in at zero. And if a craft weighs in at zero, like a photon, has no mass, but it's a whole craft, it has volume and shape and size. If it weighs zero, and you run that through Einstein's formula, I mean, anyone can understand this, in E equals mc squared, energy is equal to mass times the speed of light squared. If mass is zero, the energy is zero required to go the speed of light.
All right, David, hold, take a breath for a sec. We're going to take this break. We'll be right back with you. We're going to take some phone calls from people who have a question or two about this Mexican sighting. And also, it is strange that over the past several weeks, a number of objects have been seen in Iran. Its citizens are seeing objects everywhere. I'm wondering if these two may be tied in together. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie with our guest this hour, David Cereda, and we'll take your phone calls as well. David, over the past month or so, there have been tremendous UFO reports over the country of Iran. I mean, lots of them. Do you think that has anything to do with the Mexican sightings?
Well, I mean, it's hard to pin the source of you know what we're looking at here. I think all the signs in this case are that these are not our military craft of our own. These are obviously extraterrestrial in origin, and you know, being over the Middle East, it would not shock me with what's going on over there in the war. I think they're probably very curious with what's going on. But there seems to always be an increase in UFO activity, and that always leads me to believe in Art Bell's theory of the quickening, that we're heading towards some sort of mass event or contact. And in this case, I think one of the reasons they remain in the invisible is because when they do, I don't want to say cloak, when they materialize by slowing their wave state down equal to that of what we know as mass, they're very vulnerable to our assaults. Like in the 1942 case that made the front page of the LA Times, there was a light UFO that appeared over Los Angeles. We shined all of our searchlights on it, and we started bombing it, firing missiles at it.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the missiles just went right through it. You can see in the photograph very clearly, which is further proof that it is in the zero mass state. So I think they're actually, what this case actually shows us in Mexico is that they're probably observing us quite frequently. We are just now gaining the technological base to peer into their invisible universe where they're actually residing. I don't think they'll materialize fully and land on the White House lawn like everybody hopes until we show signs of more nonviolence and that they can trust us.
That's going to take a long time, David.
That's going to take a long time. It doesn't look good as far as the way, you know, our military bases and our fear. I mean, we just look at all of the Hollywood movies, like when Night Shyamalan made a movie about crop circles and UFOs as if they were coming to steal the world and kill us all, and yet there's nothing in the crop circle movement that is indicative of that kind of negativity. But if that's any indication of how we respond, when we're afraid, we tend to go into assault mode. And that would mean they're much safer remaining as pure light craft that we can observe now safely for them and for us in these invisible spectra of light.
Good point. Let's go to the phones. Wildcard Line, welcome to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hey, George. Yeah. How you doing? This is Rob down in Charlotte tonight. And Dave, great show so far. Quick question about this. Are you stating that this may be the propulsion is what's causing, they're going in the light for propulsion and for cloaking when they come into our atmosphere? Or is it two separate actions?
Well, to answer the question, firstly, once you're able to change the wave state of mass, which is very low, near zero waves per second, into light, which is a very high frequency wave state, you have the ability to either intentionally become a visible light source craft or go in the invisible intentionally, either in infrared or up in the ultraviolet. I believe they have done this intentionally, and they were probably very aware of the detection capabilities on board these aircraft. So yes, they're not really cloaking like in the movie Star Trek or the Star Trek series. They're not building a force field around their craft. I think they are just converting into wavelengths that are invisible to us, and that's, in a sense, that is a cloak, yes.
David, weren't these objects following the Mexican plane, so almost dodging it and just going all over the place?
Yes, they were, which means they're very aware of their presence. While they're invisible, they obviously have instrumentations to see multiple dimensionalities that we can only see slivers of. So they're probably very aware, and they probably felt very safe because they know they're made of pure light energy, and there's nothing we can do to touch them. And we could fire missiles right through them, and it would have no effect on them. However, their effect, from an effective point of view, let's go back to Roswell. I mean, this is a whole new theory on the Roswell incident. Imagine a craft that is made of pure light energy hovering interdimensionally, just like the ones we're seeing here in New Mexico in 1945-47.
Mm-hmm.
We detonated the very first nuclear bomb, Trinity, on July 5th through the 7th. And some dates go as far as July 16th, 1945. Now, 2 years later, on either side of the Trinity site, Roswell, New Mexico is on one side, and the plains of St. Augustine are on the other. Two major UFO crash sites occurred on either side of the explosion, the nuclear explosion, 2 years later, but matching up to the same day or week of time of the Trinity incident. So it's possible that the intense gamma ray burst, which is electromagnetic energy in a very strong burst, disturbed their light craft because they're vibrating in a relative frequency, threw them both out, and we did not see the effects until 2 years later, because when you're in a high frequency wave state, time is very slow, and when you slow your wave frequency down, time accelerates. So it took 2 years for us to actually see the event materialize. So again, they are vulnerable, but they're not vulnerable to physical missiles and bombs, but they're probably very vulnerable to intense bursts of electromagnetic radiation.
Good point.
So,
go ahead.
The reason they came close to the craft, to the aircraft in this case, is because they felt very safe. And yes, they did get very close, and that's what makes this video footage so incredible, is that it's some of the most clear, very, very close-range footage of light craft UFOs we've ever seen. All of the prior footage of UFOs from New Mexico or from Mexico in the 1990s and 80s were these small dots at very, very far range distances. So in this case, I think we're seeing something that is unprecedented.
First time caller line, you're on with us. Go ahead.
Yeah, hey, George. I really love the show. David, I have a question. I live down in the Gulf Coast region of Florida, down around the Escambia River Basin. We have a lot of activity down there. In fact, we joke about it. Had several instances last summer where something at a low altitude just shot up the river basin, would shoot back down. There was nothing visible. Warm wind would follow it. The fish would go crazy. There was an orange glow following the trace in the water. You know, when something passes low very fast over the water. And it's just, as I say, it was very eerie, very spooky. But it just had a hissing sound. There was nothing that can be seen, but there was that glow. And I had to wonder as to whether or not this was what you were talking about earlier.
Oh, that's just an incredible sighting you just described. Well, firstly, let's look at the movement you described. Imagine a pilot in an aircraft or spacecraft, and they're making radical turns, like you're going 1,000 miles an hour north, and you turn east on a 90-degree plane. The G-forces are going to destroy you and the craft. In the case of the NASA UFO film, I presented a very high-speed angular turn at several thousand miles an hour. There is no way, if you have mass, which is weight charge, in the pilot's body or the craft, that you can survive a high-speed turn like that. But if you're zero mass, you can bounce off the walls and you will experience zero G-forces. The next point you made that's very interesting is that the water had a residual glow. Again, it's kind of like the craft itself may have been invisible, pure electromagnetic energy, radiating pure electromagnetic energy, and that energy itself, while it's an invisible wavelength, would leave a heat residue or energy residue on mass. In this case, it's water, and that would cause a temporary glowing because of the transfer of energy. Just like in the case we're seeing now in New Mexico, if these craft are vibrating at higher energies than ultraviolet or even gamma, they are leaving a temperature on the very cold, moist atmosphere, and that temperature shows up on infrared as an image, as a moving image, as the thing is moving along. So yes, what you described is more a confirmation of the theory.
David, over the weekend, Art Bell and some other ham radio operators heard a very mysterious signal on 1420 megahertz. Do you think this has anything to do with what might have been going on in Mexico?
Well, what were the dates on that?
I think it was over the weekend.
Well, again, when you're hearing when you're seeing signals in the radio spectrum, I mean, 1420 megahertz is medium radio. High-end radio is in the gigahertz range, billion hertz range, and yes, you'll get disturbances. If these craft are electromagnetic, they will cause ripples that will move through the lower spectra of the electromagnetic spectrum. And the same way when we were using radar, the Mexican Air Force was using radar. Radar is microwave radiation, which is higher than high-end radio. It's somewhere between an actual wavelength as energy. It's lower than infrared, but higher than high-end radio. And those microwaves, again, will bounce off a signal, and you'll get a signal. So the radio spectrum, you would see disturbances in the radio spectrum, yes. And if you had radiation detectors, you might even detect signals. In fact, Trevor Constable told me some of his researchers, himself included, would first use detection methods such as, you know, looking for disturbances in detection apparatus, and then they would start photographing with their 35-millimeter cameras in the infrared and near ultraviolet, and then these UFOs would show up. In one case in 1958, there was a psychic channeler out in the desert of California near Landers at Giant Rock named George Van Tassel. And around his lectures, very early in the morning, again when the sky is very cold, you don't have a lot of heat in the atmosphere, he started taking photographs, and giant UFOs with black holes in the center, tilted on their sides, people can see this in my next film coming out in July, showed up on the film exactly the same as the NASA UFOs. So this is a consistent, very, very consistent method. The current approach, looking like where SETI is looking in the radio spectrum for intelligent signals, I think is all wrong. And where NASA is looking and why mainstream physicists do not take the UFO phenomena seriously is they don't see these huge mass energy signals tagged on to the UFO phenomena. So they think, well, they couldn't be capable of doing 99% the speed of light because there's no energy signal there. But if their craft are zero mass, their energy signal is going to be zero, and that means the only way to detect them is to look with special cameras in these invisible spectra of light. And once in a while, they will appear as balls of light in visible spectra. And there are many documented cases from airline pilots. Also, if we look in the crop circle phenomena, we will see the fuzzy, soft lights moving about the circles. And then those, too, suddenly disappear and go invisible.
I wonder if they're here to witness some kind of major event, albeit problems that are occurring on this planet that are man-made, or maybe they see some kind of object coming this way and they want a first-hand glimpse. What do you think?
Well, I mean, we could really get metaphysical. I mean, there is an amazing case. I mean, if we're thinking of a higher dimensional entity looking down at Earth and what we're doing down here, the case of the Zeitoun apparitions of the Virgin Mary, which between 1968 and 1970, there were over documented, and this was actually in the New York Times back in the 60s, 700 appearances of the Virgin Mary in a body of light in the poor district of Cairo in Egypt, and they were photographed, and above her body of light, which you can see very clearly in these photographs, are what appear to be UFOs or balls of light. So it is possible, and we can extrapolate on this idea, that our visitors are literally possibly even angelic or a higher order watching what's going on our planet.
And that's been a theory. Let's go east of the Rockies. Welcome to Coast to Coaster on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi. Greetings, Mr. Nori. This is Duffy from Youngstown, 570 WKBN.
Oh, sure thing.
Yeah. He was talking about how much energy is required for an actual craft to travel to the speed of light. Of course, he mentioned about zero mass, but if a vehicle did have mass, in order for it to achieve speed of light, it would be impossible by today's physics, but if it were to enter a different physical plane where modern physics no longer applies, would it then, theoretically be possible?
Like another dimension?
Well, that's what I'm talking about here. By changing your mass into the same wave state of light, you resemble it. In the case of the John Hutchison effect, we all know John Hutchison now, and he's a good friend of mine. He bombarded a 75-pound cannonball with a series of transitional waves, moving it from a lower frequency state into a higher one, and the cannonball levitates. And the second thing it does, in other studies he's done, he's actually got it to disappear. So, yes, it goes into another dimension. It's not possible in Einstein's law to even attain light speed. We're up to 99.99% now with a trillion electron volts. And even wormholes, according to Kip Thorne, will cost you the solar negative energy of 100 million suns, the energy they put out for an entire year. There are 100 million suns in our galaxy alone. These are ridiculous numbers. This is backwards physics to me. There's no way we're ever going to attain the speed of light by applying increasing energy on mass, but if we can reduce the mass of spacecraft to zero, then we can attain light speed on tiny amounts of energy.
Your website, UFONASA.com, the book, Evidence, the Case for NASA UFOs, is that available out in bookstores?
Well, it's also a three-hour film with Dan Aykroyd. I encourage people to see it so they can actually understand deeply how, first of all, seeing the evidence from the NASA video archives and from space shuttle footage, but also the theory of how we convert mass into light very specifically. So it's a three-hour film documentary and also a book, and people can order it from the website or they can call 1-877-toll-free-UFO-NASA. Or that's from inside the United States. If you're outside of the United States, it's 310-268-1210.
Very good. David, nice job. This Mexican UFO craze, it's just a fantastic story. Let's follow up with each other on it, okay?
Yeah, we will. We'll be in touch. And when I'm ready with part two, we'll have to do a whole show on this.
Absolutely.